more dirt and Sprague.
Where are you going? And he's like, I'm going bowling. I just started laughing because I'm like, of course you're going bowling on a random Tuesday night.
Sounds like a great Tuesday night.
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Now, do you have your own ball?
I have two balls.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt and a little splash of Sprague.
Your spare ball, you don't want it to hook as much, so it will go straighter. And then the strike ball, you want to be able to get some crank on that.
Heat on that.
When you hit the pocket, you get big pin action.
Well, everybody wants to hit the pocket. I mean, come on now.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague, your Portland sports leader. 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Morning, everybody.
Get the f*** out of here.
Just kidding. We got a lot to get to over the next 2 hours of the show. Do you know, 1 hour from now,
Mail Sack.
Mail Sack. Get your questions in, 503-864-6326. That is the Fan text line. You can throw them into the YouTube chat as well. Twitter, if you want to. Whatever the vehicle you need to get your questions in, make sure you get them in and we'll answer them. I'm coming up 1 hour from now. I got a lot of football stuff in my notes here for the next hour of radio. In a brief moment, we will begin our preview of Big Ten Media Days. They're all going to kick off here in about 45 minutes, I think. Swag said Tony Petitti's going to step up to the podium. You know what they got on display at Big Ten Media Days?
The Natty.
Three different Natty trophies.
Smart move. I mean, it should be in the background, to be honest with you, of every speech
on the
main dais. But
it really should.
I'll ask you this, ahead of the media day.
Yeah.
Which coach will have the biggest thing said at the Big Ten media day?
The most noteworthy thing? Like the biggest headline, most controversial, all of the above?
Yeah, like what was your takeaway from the SEC?
John Summerall likes pedicures. Just kidding. What was the biggest takeaway from SEC Media Day? Probably the Pete Golding stuff on tampering was my favorite. I don't have a takeaway. That was my favorite thing.
Even with Lane?
Yeah, we played some of the Lane stuff.
Eli Drinkwitz trolling and...
He kept going, too, by the way. He was doing some Missouri interviews back home. Sark was pretty
solid.
Yeah. Kirby was kind of quiet. I mean, he might have said some stuff that we just didn't play that I didn't notice.
He's just in favor of breaking away from the NCAA.
Yeah. It's like, come on, Kirby. It's because you can't win a playoff game right now.
I think your guy, Dan the Man.
You think my guy Lanning does it? Do we bring an inflatable duck to Chicago?
I don't believe we will be in the river.
Did we put a billboard up of Dante Moore in Chicago?
Good question.
I don't know if we have or have not.
I think we would have known it by now if
That's
we did.
That's true. We just did the Tokyo thing. All the billboards up in Tokyo.
Or he takes the approach of he gives good Dan Lanning answers, but he doesn't really say the thing because he's trying to kind of now fly under the radar a little bit in the terms of like, I need to not end the season the way I've ended it.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean,
curious.
Look, he's not going to say anything that will change the way I feel about that. But there is the idea of, like, I'm curious how because you know he's going to get asked about that. Like, hey, dude, you've been incredible. What the hell happened
last
2 years?
How do you end your seasons back-to-back ways?
Yeah, and I don't know what his answer is going to be, but it is one of the more curious things for me. Big Ten Media Days get underway. We thought, let's talk some college football with our buddy George Reister, former Oregon Duck, host of the Unafraid Show. You can check it out on YouTube, youtube.com/Unafraid Show. He's going to be part of the CW college football coverage this fall, and you can give him a follow on Twitter, at George Reister. George, good morning to you. How do you make sense of, now that we're on the brink of starting Big Ten Media Days and getting the season underway, we got some time under our belt here, what the hell has happened at the end of the year the last 2 years for Oregon, and where is that as a concern for you going into such a highly anticipated season for them?
Well, I have no concerns about the way that the previous years ended, and this is the reason why. You have a coach in Dan Lanning who just finished his fourth year, right? And how many coaches outside of the Larry Cokers who have inherited, you know, a championship roster prior to them getting there have won before year six? You didn't see it out of Kirby Smart. You didn't see it out of Ryan Day. Kurt Cignetti's been a head coach for 20 years. And so there's some growing processes to it. And you also look at how those things happened and what Dan Lanning has done. You're looking at a guy who has only lost to teams that have either won national championship or played in the national championship game. Like, those are the only losses. So then you look and you see, all right, is this a structural issue? Is this a coaching issue? At then, and remember, I'm not in the excuse business. I'm in the reason business. is that sometimes it is important to understand why things happened. And you look at that at the Rose Bowl game against Ohio State. That's the national champion. It's the best team in the country. And in 2 years of the playoff, seven of the eight teams that have had byes have lost. Georgia has done it twice. Arizona State has lost. Boise State has lost. Ohio State lost in the first round this last year. There's something about the bye and having a month off while the teams that you're going to play against are only all have played within 10 days of having to play you. That's why those teams have started slowly. And then you go to this last year, and I believe that if Dan Lanning had to do it all over again with Tosh Lupoi and Will Stein, with them literally being in Kentucky and in Berkeley on game week, that made it extremely tough to be able to game plan. I mean, even Indiana's defensive coordinator, Brian Haynes, he said if this wasn't the same team that we saw in Eugene, that was a close game into the fourth quarter. And even Oregon was up in the fourth quarter after Brandon Finney pick. So I'm not concerned about it, and I'm also less concerned about the way the season's ended, because you were dealing with very young football teams, and you're still dealing with a young football team. But there's a lot of veterans on here. You got a second year starting quarterback who's an NFL dude, probably the first pick in the draft. You have four guys in your defensive line with Washington, Tuioti, Uiagalelei, and the other kid as well. That are going to go in the first and second round. Who are going to go in the first and second round of the draft. You have one of the best secondaries in the entire country. And those are things that lend itself to you being able to win a national championship and the growth that it takes, even though that people want microwave results. Hmm.
A lot of people had opinions on hiring the new coordinators, George, of like keeping it internal versus do you outsource? And I know when they lost Dillingham, he went and found Will Stein, and that worked out really well. And then everybody had an opinion about Lupoi when he was here, but he gets the job at Cal. I'm kind of curious. There's been some opinion takeaways, I guess, from the candidates and the guys that they have ultimately picked to be the new DCs and OCs. What did you make of Dan Lanning's decision to stay internal instead of going outside of the program for those spots?
When you are dealing with coaching searches, it's just like anything else in life. The sexy thing to do is to go outside and go find something great, you know. We didn't have a chance to talk to Hampton. We didn't have a chance to talk to Maringer during the season or even the last two seasons to understand their contributions to the offense and to the defense. And so it looks sexy to go get somebody else from outside of the building and then have them acclimate to your culture. Are they going to do it? Do they 100% buy into the philosophy, or is this just a great opportunity for them? And Hampton has proven himself. He's been a good defensive coordinator prior at Tulane. He left a promising job that he was doing good at, just beat USC in a New Year's Six bowl game, and then left to take a demotion, if you will, the way he could learn and grow and have more opportunities, the way he can be a head coach. So that's literally the Dante Moore path for a defensive coordinator. Then you look at Maringer. He's a guy who Dan and the rest of the staff have thought very highly of, and that they believe that the difference between him and Will Stein is that Will Stein obviously was able to have a lot of success as a coordinator, but they believe that Maringer is going to have an opportunity to have more answers in game for when defenses make big adjustments against them.
Hmm. We're talking with George Reister, former Oregon tight end, at George Reister on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Host of the Unafraid Show on YouTube, and he's also going to be a part of the college football coverage on the CW coming up this fall. As we look to the Big Ten as the media day start, and you kind of look at the race at the top, do you see it as Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, big gap, everybody else? Are you still a buyer in Indiana despite all that they lost? Or do you see somebody else maybe jumping their way into that top three, top four conversation? What do you make of the conference as a whole as we get the season underway here?
I think this is the best version of the Big Ten that we have ever seen. That the bottom is much higher than you've ever seen. When I was doing my rankings on YouTube, which I put them out on Unafraid Show, is the Big Ten rankings. Of course, you know, whatever order that you want to argue about for Oregon, Ohio State, and then Indiana at three, outside of that, then it gets extremely tough. It gets extremely tough. And then when you get toward the middle, you're putting teams at 12, 13, and you're saying, whoa, 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 this feels yuck. This feels gross to have a team like Minnesota between 11 and 13 when they have won so many games. You know it's a tough game, and it just gets harder and harder. And there are teams that you actually believe are very good football teams, and they're at 9, 10, 14. And you're just like, how is this possible that this team is 14th? And then you say, I can't put them in front of any of these other teams. Hmm. But I want to focus for a second on Indiana, because there's been a lot of talk there both ways. Their fans, who I say are that Indiana is new money now. Like they are the people that won the lottery and then bought the $1 million house inside the gated community. They're inside the country club, but then they're also not putting they don't know which fork to use. They eat dinner with a salad fork. They're putting the water glass on the wrong side, and they just kicking their feet up. And they believe that they are they're on a generational Saban run where they're going to win 6 national championships in 12 years. Well, here's the issue with Indiana and them believing that is I believe that with their non-conference schedule, which is honestly embarrassing, that of course they're going to be 3-0. So that puts them at a place where because they are very well coached, you know, at minimum, probably a 9-win team. But then you look at this roster and you can say, oh, well, they won it last year and they were very thin. They weren't all the way up on scholarship numbers and all of that stuff. Yes, that was an outlier. That is not what happens in college football. So Indiana, their frontline starters are very good, very good. But they lack the depth to be able to consistently make it through seasons. I know, you know, we practice different. We all of this stuff. Well, as Oregon fans or as any other college football fans, you know what happens when you're on the way to a national championship and Dennis Dixon's knee blows out. You know what happens when, you know, a kicker gets hurt or misses the wrong kick or you fumble against Stanford. That's the thing that Indiana hasn't experienced because they've been so god-awful at college football. They were the losingest program in college football until 2 years ago, and now they're the second most losing. So, that's how bad that they were, and they have no real understanding of what life in the big leagues is like.
They got a natty out of it, though, George. I mean, they got the natty, so I think they're okay being called the new money. I want to ask you about a poll question we posted today.
I love that.
Should a college football program be allowed to count a national championship that they say they won in 1869?
Sure. I mean, you all won it, but we all know that we do have to be nuanced and take things for what they are. And I'm going to give you an example from another sport. In the NBA, we look at or college basketball. We look at, you know, those Bill Russell Boston Celtics championships or the John Wooden's at UCLA. How could you? It's impossible to do that in this era because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar ain't staying in college for more than 6 months. You know, versus 3 to 4 years back in the day, and that's the thing that's different now is that it's a different era. So yes, you can claim them all you want to, but this is the most difficult era to win a championship in any sport because of free agency, because of transfer portal, because of all of those others, and going to the league early and everything. It is much more difficult. And then the amount of games that you have to win. You used to have to win a bowl game to win the national championship, and then you actually had to play in a playoff with two teams, and then you had four, and now you got 12. well, it has never been more difficult.
Yeah, George, I hate to say this, man. That was the wrong answer. That's a no. That's the 1800s. What are we doing? At least you gave me 1900s examples in basketball. 1800s, I'm not counting. Let me ask you about the new coaches in the conference. I'm very curious who should scare the Big Ten more, Kyle Whittingham at a place like Michigan or Matt Campbell at a place like Penn State?
I'm going to go with none of the above. Even though I do have a lot of respect for Matt Campbell and Kyle Whittingham, because I actually have him as one of the top three coaches in college football, period. But I do believe that what Bob Chesney is doing at UCLA, that this could be a very special run. If you look at their if they beat Cal in the opening game, that means that every single game is winnable. Every single one on their schedule, except for Oregon, probably. Mm. And that could put them at a Cignetti, at ceiling 11-1, even though I do believe that the most realistic scenario, if they beat Cal, is probably 8-4, maybe 9-3. But I do believe that we're going to see one of them very quick turnarounds at UCLA. Now so that's why I would put him at number one on the list. But behind him, I would put Whittingham at Michigan because he matches them. Now, I don't believe that happens this year because I do believe that they have a quarterback problem with Bryce Underwood. I don't believe it until I see it. I will not believe that he is anything more than a special talent until I see it, the same way with Arch Manning. And when it comes to Matt Campbell, I think that when you look at their schedule and what they brought over from Iowa State, it's like people are dismissing. Oh, they're like, oh, yeah, Rocco Beck and those Iowa State guys, they're over here. Well, the problem is they brought all the best Iowa State guys and then put them with who were veterans and who were playing. And then you add them with what was left at Penn State, which wasn't scraps. So now all of a sudden you got yourself a good football team, and you know he's going to be tough. He's going to be physical. He's got a veteran. He's got a veteran quarterback. He's got a cupcake SEC old school schedule in the non-conference, which I despise. And then he's going to have an opportunity because they avoid, outside of USC, the majority of the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, the schedule definitely breaks their way this year. Last one for you, George. Where's your biggest question mark for Oregon this year? Is it the coordinators being new, the offensive line, linebacker? I know is a position people bring up. Where is the weakness that kind of sticks in your mind about a month away from the start of the year?
I wouldn't even point to anything as necessarily a weakness as opposed to I'm curious to how that's going to work out. One thing is, I believe that the defensive side, I do believe that this will be the number one defense in the country. I have no questions there. Mm. But on the offensive side, I have to wonder, because it's a new offensive line and you're saying, okay, is this going to work? But then Alik Terry has put together back-to-back Joe Moore Award finalist teams. And if they believed that they needed more, they would have went out in the portal and got more. So I it's hard for me not to trust that, because history says that I should trust it. Mm. Now I am excited to I got my eyes on Drew Maringer. I'm not gonna lie there, because I do believe that that's something that could go left, but then we have to trust that Dan has been a very good hirer of people.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. 2-for-2 on offense coordinator. Both those guys got jobs right away at big-time programs. George Reiser, you can check out The Unafraid Show on YouTube. He's also going to be a part of the CW's college football broadcast this coming fall. Give him a follow on Twitter, at George Reiser. George, man, we always appreciate the time. I know it's early for you. Enjoy Big Ten Media Days, and let's do this again soon.
Oh, it's actually not early for me. It is 6:20 p.m. where I am.
Where are you at right now?
Where are you at?
I'm in Greece right now.
What? You agreed for a radio hit?
An international radio hit?
This is an international radio hit? Are you not hitting our company with a phone bill, are you? Because I don't know if we can cover that right now. You're paying for the bill, right? Have fun in Greece, man. That's awesome.
For you guys. All right.
There you go. Go enjoy your vacation. There's George Rice.
I didn't know he was in Greece. I wouldn't have bothered him.
Dude, talk about it. That's a homie right there. Yeah, coming on in Greece. If I'm ever in Greece and somebody asks me for a radio hit, you are not getting texted back.
Well, he responded. Like, usually in the history of me getting George on the show, he's responded within 3 minutes.
Yes.
He didn't respond for the first 4 hours. Yeah. And I was like,
well, that explains. Probably the middle of the night or something when you sent the text.
And then I saw him when he responded, and I'm doing the math, and I'm like, dude, now that kind of makes sense.
Were those takes unafraid? Some unafraid takes in there. Look, I appreciate the size of ball it takes to still punch at Indiana right now. I'm certainly not going to do it.
They're new money. Yeah, so were the Ducks. They got the title. You didn't.
I appreciate
that
the effort.
That sounded like...
I'm not going there, but I appreciate the effort, because it ain't easy mountain climb.
That tasted like sour grapes.
Yeah. Think a little bit.
Sour.
A team that came out of nowhere and won a national championship. Now they're only the second worst team in the history of college football. Let's talk a little bit about this. We got Big Ten Media Days getting underway. Also, a question for future Oregon purposes. And we'll dive into that. A little college football, Big Ten conversation next on The Fam. Welcome back in. Big Ten Media Days about to get underway. Not a ton of noteworthy stuff for the show today. It'll be more so for the timing of it in Chicago. It'll mainly be for our show. It'll be the next day.
Yeah, because they're starting a little later than the SEC ones
did.
The ACC ones.
Start a little bit later in the day.
But
so
Petiti might say something of interest we could pass along at some point.
Anything noteworthy comes out, we'll pass it along. And then obviously Lanning will be tomorrow at the end of the show, right? Maybe at the end of the show, TBD? We don't know exactly what time yet.
He's last up. He's going at 10:45 tomorrow morning.
So we won't get to that until Thursday.
So that'll be Thursday's show.
Yeah. But other shows after us will have it tomorrow, and then we'll react to some of it on Thursday. Two things are true here.
Mm.
One of the more gracious radio hits we've ever had, debatably number one.
In Greece, without a doubt.
To even respond to my text on vacation to do a Portland, Oregon radio hit while in Greece.
In Greece.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
Also,
living that good life.
Absolutely, why people despise Duck fans.
I love it, dude.
The new money
to
line
start from,
on Indiana.
Let's go all the way back, by the way, to the start of the interview of me asking him, how worried are you by the end of the last two seasons? And he's not worried at all. The level of balls it takes to get to that point, I respect it, man.
I think that's level-headed.
Yeah,
are you going to lose every playoff game by 50 points?
But I also think it's a little ludicrous to say there's not any concern at all. Now, you could say it's not going to happen again. You could have that take that you think those were just, there were random one-offs. You cannot tell me that in the back of your mind there's not that. I don't know if it's 5% of the thought, 2% of the thought, 10% of the thought. If that happened to your team, you wouldn't just think about it at all? You just out of sight, out of mind, never happened, pretend like it didn't exist?
I wouldn't say it never happened, but like his age and it only being year five this year makes me like, I'm not panicking. If he's here for 12
years.
That
again, nobody's saying panicking. There's a difference between panicking and nothing at all. That you don't have to go to panicking, but to say that you don't spend any time concerned about it.
What would you be concerned about at this point? It's almost the next season. The game has been over for months, so I guess
that literally a year ago. We said, it was Ohio State. It happened. It's in the rearview mirror now. And then guess what? It happened again.
It did. Circumstances, to be fair, and I can't believe I'm the one defending and you're the one panicking, pointing fingers.
Again, not panicking.
No, it sounds panicky. I think on the radio it sounds panicky.
I think
you sound panicked.
Look, I love George. I love Cocky Duck fan, and I am at times Cocky Duck fan. The idea of saying that has there's zero thought at all on that, I just laugh at that. And I think there's a little bit of blustering and PR that's going on there.
Can you say that you don't want to lose like that, but also you're not thinking about it?
It is lingering my if Oregon makes the playoff this year, you're telling me that is a Duck fan, you wouldn't have the slightest thought at kickoff of please God don't happen again.
Oh, you don't want.
So
it
if
to
that's
again.
if your mind goes there, then clearly it's a thought that you have in your head. I'm not predicting it's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying every time he's in the playoff they will get blown out. When it happens back to back years, that's not an outlier. It's not a 1 year thing. And yeah, that will be in my head until they go through a playoff run and show that they can go through that run without getting their asses kicked. Then it goes away. Even if you don't win the national championship this year, it goes away of okay, all right, deep breath, didn't happen 3 years in a row. Thank for the love of God.
So how can I phrase this? If you say it's not panicked, even though you sound kind of panicked, how can I phrase it?
There's a lot of expectations on this year, man, and the season has not ended well the last 2 years, okay?
So are you worried? How would you describe
it? I don't know how to describe it. I just think there's a...
Is it in the back of your head?
There is a 5% of the back of my head when I think of Oregon football that thinks about, oh my God, are they going to get blown out again? Yeah. 5% of my Duck brain works that way. Now, for some, it might be less than that. For some, it might be more. I'm just pointing out I don't think it's fair to say there's zero concern at all. Now, I agree with the extenuating circumstances. His stats are not wrong about the teams off of byes in the first round of the playoff. We talked about the Indiana offensive coordinator or defense coordinator comments about, you know, how Oregon was so much easier to game plan against the second time around because their coordinators had 1 foot or 2 feet out the door. You had the running back injuries. Like, all of that is certainly true, and I don't disagree with any of it. It also, like, Indiana had a first-round bye too, man. Didn't affect them. Indiana lost one of their best defensive linemen in the Big Ten Championship game. Remember the celebration of the Big Ten Championship game?
I do. He got injured.
Busted his knees, yeah. Jumping up to give somebody a high five.
Yep.
It didn't impact them. So, like, everybody deals with injuries to a certain extent. And, again, I'm not saying it will happen every year, and I'm not panicked about it. But I also, I can't, even in my biased duck brain, I cannot go to the point of saying there's no concern at all.
Okay.
Does it dominate my thought? No, but there is some concern.
Poll question, if you're a Duck fan, is getting blown out in the playoff, again, in the back of your head? Yes or no?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
All right.
Until they show that they won't, it won't happen, then yes, it is.
Can we go to the other one, the sour grape
fly? The new money?
The new money.
See, that was more applicable to me. That one made me laugh. That was pretty
insane.
Solid. You guys don't know what it's like. You haven't been through that meat grinder year in and year out. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
This might be a dumb question for some.
It sucks to see the new person at the party get something you've wanted forever.
We've been the new guy at the party.
I know.
And the girl never invited us to the bedroom, and it's been brutal. This guy shows up 5 minutes later. He's in the room hooking up with her. What's happening right now? What would be more surprising to you? Indiana winning another national championship with Kurt Cignetti or becoming what would be a good comp? Who's a good, like, 9-win team every year that's, like, on the border but not quite championship worthy? Becoming that regularly. 8 or 9 wins, maybe a 10-win season every now
really
and then.
Yeah, you're really in on this 8-4 Cignetti.
I'm not predicting it. I'm just asking what would be more surprising to you? Them winning another national title or becoming an 8-9 win team every year?
Like a consistent, so it's not one or even two. It's like 3 or 4 straight years of Cignetti being 8-4.
Or 9-3.
Or 9-3.
Just on the outside of the playoff looking in.
Dude, it sucks.
Good, but not elite.
Look, I'm not picking Indiana to win. That is not a sport I want to do that. I would take the field all day, every day, never think about it twice. In those two situations, I would be more surprised as a football viewer if he consistently became an 8-9 win team.
Over winning another second national title.
10-2, not winning for a few years, absolutely. 9-3, popping up, yeah, not out of the realm. 8-4, 9-3, consistently, yeah. Because you know what? He was right. Google me. I win. 10-2. Yep. I hate Ohio State. I hate Michigan. Boom. Year 2, Big Ten title, undefeated, national champ. Yeah. They went old, but they're also starting to recruit better now.
They are.
They're not as old, but they still got skilled return guys, or not return guys, guys that are skilled at positions that are key, transferring in. I lean, I would be more surprised if he just fell into the good, not great category.
Yeah, but kind of what USC has been the last 2 or 3 years, where you're like, you're on the brink, we talk about you, you're in the mix as a playoff team, but then you drop the big game in November.
I mean, largely what Ole Miss was for a big portion of my life. Like, a pretty good SEC team, but never one I picked to win until what they did last year.
They're such an interesting team this year because they came out of nowhere, and I think our heads are still trying to wrap themselves around the fact that Indiana won the national championship, because it's just like, we went from nothing to title in 2 years, and that just is such a rare story in the history of sports, and how they evolve going forward, and do they truly become a year in and year out title contender? If he wins a second national championship, I mean, you're talking, since we actually had the national championship game, which started in 1998, how many coaches have won multiple national titles? The list is very slim. Saban obviously did it.
Kirby, Saban,
Dabo. I'm sure Urban's got a couple.
Yeah.
So that's 4. Is there anybody in there we're forgetting? You could give me Pete Carroll if you want, but one of the years that USC claims that they didn't win the national championship, they were voted by the AP number one. They didn't win the title game. They claimed 2 titles in a year in the BCS in which they didn't actually win a national championship game.
Yes, so it'd be just those 4, right?
I mean, unless there's somebody, text in
Miami?
If there's someone forgetting.
No, Miami didn't.
No, Miami won the 1, and then they
went
back.
Jimmy won 2, didn't he? Or Jimmy went to Super
But again,
Bowls
I'm just national. Talking in the national championship game era since 1998, gotcha, when you actually had to play a national championship game.
Yeah, maybe
game.
4.
Because Miami won 1 against Nebraska, and then they lost to Ohio State. So they won 1, and they tried to go back-to-back, and then Ohio State beat them. Dressel only had the one.
Dabo, Urban.
I believe Bobby Bowden only had one. I think Saban, Stoops only had one.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking an exclusive list in the last 25, 30 years of college football.
Repeat champion we had.
It was Georgia a couple years ago.
That's right.
So we had them go back to back. And then before then, obviously.
That's right, because Kirby won his two in a row. And then, yeah,
he couldn't win it. And then he won two in a row. And then they haven't won a playoff game since then. For that reason, it's like, man, that puts you into an elite all time category.
Okay.
If you get another, you're already in there winning one at Indiana. Yeah. Like, you're already an all time legend in the sport. Winning another one almost makes you a dynasty.
I think it's one thing to win another one, especially if you won in a row. Like, to your point, like how crazy that is in that sport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm what I've not really been able to understand is the opinion of you think not you think this year, but the opinion and idea that they suddenly fall to 8-4. Mm. Why? If Lanning did it, that wouldn't be the opinion. If Riley did it, wouldn't be the opinion. If Whittingham did it, wouldn't
Riley's
be the opinion.
Always been 8-4.
Ryan Day, well, I know,
to be
but
fair.
Ryan Day might be able to do it.
Yeah,
I don't know if we'd have that opinion. Kirby, no. Dabble, like the laundry list of coaches. If they did or they came onto the scene, I don't think we have this opinion. If Dan Lanning did what Kurt Cignetti did, you would laugh at the face and notion of the idea of somebody suggesting Dan Lanning,
without a doubt,
didn't have staying power and was going to be an 8-4, 9-3 coach.
I mean, I had people arguing that to me last year, and I laughed at them last year. I think it's just because of the idea of, can you truly do it year in and year out? And this will change over time, because Indiana's talent acquisition has certainly gotten better since he took over. It's just it is the ultimate outlier in the history of college football. Like, there's no debating that.
The entire thing is the outlier. It's of the like entire that, sport.
And so that's the like if Oregon had won a national, let's say Oregon wins a national title last year.
But there's also enough evidence to suggest it's not random. He won everywhere he's coached.
No doubt about it.
They were 10-2 in year one.
Yeah.
This wasn't literally 4-8 to national champion undefeated.
Sure.
This was a culmination of lower level football mixed in with upper level football, and that he just did something we never thought he'd do.
And there's nothing I could take away from the team last year. They were the best team in the country from start to finish. They dominated their way to a national title game. Like, there is no criticism or critique of that in any way, shape, or form. It's mainly going back to year one of they were 10-2 and it came out of nowhere. Their best win was over a 7-5 team, and they played nobody in non-conference. And the two times they played a team with a pulse, what happened?
And
I'm not criticizing him for that.
I know, but you're kind of also holding Indiana in an expectation of programs that always go 10-2 or better, whereas it was Indiana.
Sure, but this is the point now. So people are arguing that they are now that they're always 10-2 or better, and that's just the only question that remains for me.
I'm saying more often than not, I think they're going to be that than not with him. And I don't know how many more years he's going to coach.
I mean, I imagine he's going to be around for a while. He's getting paid a lot of money. I don't see him walking away anytime soon. His kids are all grown up. Like, what the hell would you run away from?
He could get to 70. What is he? Is he 64 or 65?
He's pretty
Something
old.
Something like that?
Yeah.
He could get to 70. I'm eventually going to get to a point where
65.
I say 65. There you
65.
Go. 65. He might get to 68, 69, and it starts to age like Belichick. And I'll go, yeah, dude.
He's also unique in the coaching profession because he waited a long time to be a head coach, and he certainly has won everywhere he's been, but everywhere else has been a lower level of coaching.
Correct.
He only has 2 years of coaching at the Power 5 level as a head coach under his belt.
He at least has the history of Saban.
Like,
and
he didn't
Bama.
Become a head coach until he was 63 years old at the Power 5 level. I know he was a head coach before then. Now, the one benefit they will have that I love making fun of them for, although my team is kind of falling into this now, is that they are a guaranteed 3-0 every year because they play North Texas, Howard, and Western Kentucky. Next year, it is Kennesaw State, Indiana State, and UMass. The year after that, it's Austin Peay, Eastern Michigan, and Miami, Ohio.
Jeez.
The year after that, it's Ball State, Eastern Illinois, and Western Kentucky. And then they finally have a home-and-home at Notre Dame starting in 2030. There is a question here on Oregon that I'd like to ask, because as much as I would like to make fun of Indiana for that, my team's kind of falling into this category. They're non-conference schedule for the next handful of years. This year's somewhat interesting because Boise might be a playoff team. Oklahoma State. But by the way, fun fact on the Oklahoma State game, that is like the second or third most expensive Oregon ticket on the entire schedule this year of any of their games, whether they be home or road. The ticket prices in Stillwater are nuts because their fan base is fired up with the new coach.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon's coming in top 10. That's one of the more expensive tickets on the year. Should Oregon try and schedule harder? Because they got some openings down the road, and I want to talk about that a little bit. A few other notes on Big Ten Media Day, and then where is the landing spot for this player that has demanded a trade? Get to that next, 105.1 FM, The Fam. All right, we got the mail sack coming up top of the hour. Let's get your questions in, last chance.
Ooh, I like it.
Want to read a couple thoughts here. This one said, there will be doubt until the Ducks win it all. It's title or bust, just my opinion as a Duck fan. Another one, the short guy seemed panicked. I'm 5'9", you jackass. What else do we got in here? When something happens 2 years straight, yes, absolutely. The monkey is on our back, so until we get it off, it'll be there. Another one, totally agree with Dirt. Oregon blowout is on our minds. Somebody said, I don't think his Oregon is being new money anymore 10 years ago. Sure.
Oh, they're not new money anymore. It was more to me him calling out Indiana for being new money. They won the title. Oregon, when they were new money, was fun. It was innovative. It was, oh, my God, look at us. They couldn't quite get over that hump. Indiana did it rather quickly. So
that, I think, was the point that Reister was trying to make, is that usually you have to go through the journey. Like, there's the, we can't beat the Pistons, and then we beat the Pistons and won the
title. You earn your way.
You earn your way there, and that's why it was so unique. They earned it, sure, but there was none of the hard road of climbing to success that usually happens.
You were born on second. They got born on third. They got on before you.
Well, I think they were born on first base and then somehow legged it out. Everybody else made a couple of errors. I still don't know how the hell that happened, man.
I mean, look, they're not going to get quieter.
No, God, no.
I mean, Oregon hasn't won the title, and I'd argue their fans don't get quiet. Indiana fans are only going to be
I got no beef with Indiana fans. This is, I think, the point, and then we'll move on. The Indiana stuff, it's more of just an interesting storyline to me of, is this what it's going to be year in and year out? And you're 100% spot on. Like, if somebody said that about Oregon and Ohio State, after winning a title, the answer would immediately be, of course, that's not going to happen. And the reason I would say it wouldn't happen for either of those two is that the tale as old as time in this sport has been the acquisition of talent is the most important metric in terms of winning.
Yes, it is.
Right now, the 2027 class is the next recruiting class. According to Rivals, do you know Indiana just signed a 5-star quarterback, one of the top-rated quarterbacks in the country, or was it a wide receiver? Anyway, they signed a 5-star kid, like last week on Pat McAfee's show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where their recruiting class for 2027 ranks in the Big Ten?
Indiana's.
In the Big Ten, not in the country, in the Big Ten.
I'm going to fathom not very high yet. I'm going to say 11th.
Okay, they are 10th.
Okay.
Behind Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, UCLA, Nebraska, Washington, Penn State, and Wisconsin. And you could say last year that they proved that that didn't matter, and you would be 100% correct. My follow-up is, does their recruiting ever get to the point where we talk about them in the same category as an Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, who we just kind of know, Alabama maybe not anymore. And does it matter? And if it doesn't matter as time goes on, then by all means, any question of it goes out the window.
I can't fathom Dirt it ever gets to the level.
I don't think so either.
Can it be top 8 in the
country? They also have a lot of money to spend. They have the largest alumni base in the country.
Are you better? Yeah, but here's the thing. And I think, like Michigan, like we pulled a Whittingham cut because he was asked about quarterbacks ahead of his Big Ten Media Day.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the 5-star quarterbacks. Are they the most expensive, debatably, on the market in high school, college recruiting?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Are you better served taking your money and getting a Josh Hoover?
Oh, without a doubt. I agree with that sentiment, too.
I think their money, they're not caring about high school recruiting. I don't know. It's a really tough thing to gauge. I don't think there'll ever be Ohio State, Oregon, even USC, who has seemingly turned around, maybe Michigan with Whittingham.
From a high school recruiting standpoint?
From a high school standpoint.
Sure.
But I think they'll get enough of the high school guys for them and then say, let's spend more of the money at experienced DB, experienced linebacker, experienced lineman, experienced quarterback, or whoever it is, right? So that's what I would say more with the way that they spend their resources. You're probably always looking to upgrade your facilities and make sure you're at the top of that game, top chefs, top all the stuff around it. I don't know how much they truly, truly want to invest in saying, we need a top 6 class nationally in high school recruiting. Half of those kids, and I'm not saying Oregon, Ohio State, but it just feels like, I think for most, maybe I'm alone here, half of the recruiting classes of these schools are gone anyway. They're going to hop in the portal.
A good amount of kids, yeah. Depending on where you're at and the way you're able to take care of your players, yes. That is definitely
a thing. I think they view that as like, hey, they're going to get the 4-star. We're just going to poach him in 2 years because he won't play over that 5-star.
And that is the ultimate question that I have of just, we had never seen a team do that and win a national championship, and they bucked that trend. We saw TCU get there as not an elite recruiter, and they lost by 60. We saw Washington get there as an outside top 25 recruiter. They got dominated in the game, and it got away from them late. And so you've seen teams get there. We've never seen a team actually win a championship doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was such an outlier. And just the question of, the roster's not 25 anymore. A lot of your guys are gone. You replace them with a very good portal class. Can you go do it again? Can you go be a playoff team and a national title contender again? I think it's an interesting subplot of this season. Maybe they answer that question emphatically and win back-to-back titles for all I know.
How many programs in the Big Ten have more pressure to win the title this year than Dan Lanning in Oregon?
To win the championship? Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. I mean, Ohio State always has that every year. They wanted to fire Ryan Day even after he won a national title. So, but outside of Oregon, nobody has more pressure to win a national championship.
Feels like you guys are the Rams of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that vibe, right?
Loaded like, up, got everybody to come back. Here we go. Your quarterback's a Heisman front runner. Like, yes. There you go.
I want to read a couple more thoughts here. Somebody said, in 2023, you had a Michigan beat guy come on the show and say, we called his shot that Michigan was the best team and they'd win the national championship, and it happened. To me, Oregon has that same talent and expectation. It's time to do it. No more excuses. And that is absolutely the sentiment going into the year. There is a title or bust mentality. I just avoid that phrasing a little bit because I hate the idea of, like, if – getting blown out would be bust, and that's why that's in the back of my mind.
I'm with you.
It's a disaster.
It's panic time.
But if you're in a close game and your quarterback gets hurt and you lose by a field goal, like, I'm not going to say that's a bust of a season, right? Like, there's you have to wait and see how it all plays out. That's the one reason I push back slightly on the title or bust saying going into the year. But there's no doubt at the start of Big Ten Media Day, and Lanning will talk tomorrow, the expectation is a national championship.
That is absolutely the expectation. I mean, title or bust, you're right. You can get to a title game, lose, be emotionally devastated to watch the third title game loss of your life, but also say, dude, we're in the title. Like
we're that close again. We got over the monkey of getting, you know, the blowout in the playoffs off our back.
I view Oregon and Dan Lanning a lot like the sport of golf. You've come off and you've expected to shoot in the low 80s and you've come off in the high 90s at the end of your year.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks to come off a round. What are you not going to golf anymore?
Right. Oh, you keep
if they lose in the semis, swings. They lose in the title game. Like, you're going to be devastated.
You're not going anywhere.
Exactly. You're going to next year and be like, well, how are we going to get better here and there? I totally understand it lingering. I understand, like, you don't want to end in a season with a blowout the way that they have the last two seasons. I do think there were circumstances last year, not to excuse it, because I didn't think Oregon would be that bad.
No.
But I did highlight going in through that playoff experience, hey, dude, the coaches are leaving. The coaches are leaving. And I was told, no big deal. The coaches are leaving. They're in Kentucky and California the week of the game. This is a deal. And it showed itself. And Indiana did to Oregon what nobody thought that they would, the way Ohio State did. I understand that being a terrible way to end your year. You have to bank. Is it going to end like that for a third straight year? If it does, we'll certainly have to have questions. But guy's in his 30s. Like, what's going to happen win the title this year?
We're not going to run Dan Lanning out of town.
No.
He's one of the best young coaches in the league.
You got to have a little perspective. It's golf. You're going to have a bad round. Other years, you can have really good rounds. Maybe you have the round of your life and you finally win the championship.
Yeah, it's funny because I just remember a year ago being like, what are the chances it happens back-to-back years? That's not going to happen back-to-back years. And then it did.
The first play.
first play of the game.
Pick six on the first play.
Opening play of the game.
To the biggest DB on their team.
The one guy you're like, don't throw it that guy. And by the way, there was a wide open receiver on the other side of the field. And if he just would have thrown it, it would have been 30-yard gain. Much different world. They go on to win the game.
I swear I thought my TV glitched watching him go in the end zone. I go, no.
It was a quiet sit-down moment for me. Like, all right, okay. Whoa. Last one here quickly, and then we'll go to the mail sack at the top of the hour.
Yeah.
How is the Big 12 feeling today? So they, of course, got their big, their Mountain Dew or their Monster Energy patch all
Monster
over the place.
Monster Energy deal, yeah.
Monster Energy deal, $20 million. And we all said, man, that's
we made fun of them.
Not a lot of money for a lot of branding. We had a lot of logos.
The Big 12 brought to you by Monster Energy.
Okay, I get it. Fits. Ohio State just inked a deal today.
Tell me how much more they made than the entire conference.
This will be a jersey patch for all 36 Ohio State teams. This is just Ohio State, not the entire Big Ten conference. And Ohio State this year is going to earn $17 million.
What's the patch? Who is it?
Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase.
Oh,
you need a credit card? We got you, bud. We got you, dog.
My wife got a Chase card. There's good rewards there when you use that.
You got some point backs. You got some nice
percentage
points there.
Get a lot of hotel stays, man.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
$17 million for 1 year for Ohio State, J.P. Morgan. The entire Big 12 for all of their floors, fields, and jerseys
That's
is getting
brutal.
$20 million for the entire conference.
That's brutal.
What are you doing? Big 10 Media Day thoughts. If they come up in the final hour, Petitti's press conference has begun. He's got the trophies standing right next to him. We start the final hour, though, with the mail sack, and it's next on The Fam.